There are signs of global economic and financial instability all around us. So recession isn't necessarily the question here, though that could be part of it. The real question is, what stage in the process of the supply shock are we actually in? What's left in front of us? The evidence for the supply shock case is all around us, all over the world too. But what does that actually mean? Now, there are generally three stages to the supply shock. The first is the upside. That's what looks like inflation, and to many people, it looks like prosperity, maybe even permanent prosperity. But it was all artificial and, here's the thing, unstable. So that leads us into a second stage, which is the transition. The artificial stuff begins to wear off, and we start to search for a more stable equilibrium. And we struggle in that transition for quite a while because of competing ideas and perceptions. Some people believe we're in the 1970s. Other people believe that prosperity was real. But most of all, I think the vast majority of us can tell, it's unsteady and unstable. And that leads to increasing problems throughout that period, in that stage. And that brings us to the third stage, which is finally reaching the new equilibrium. And that's the tricky part, because that new equilibrium in large part depends upon the degree and the scale of the imbalance that we started with back in stage one. More imbalance, the more we have to deal with it on the other side. And also how much of that imbalance was dealt with in the second transition stage. So where are we in the supply shock process? And what does that mean for us moving forward? Because as the third stage potentially becomes tricky, there's the potential for it to be more than just, say, a recession. There's maybe the potential for disorderly unwinding, the reversion to the mean. But what does that mean actually mean? That's what we're going to go over today. But before we get to all of that, I do want to remind you, Eurodollar University is having its spring sale. Tremendous deals on especially the deep dive analysis and all the bundles that go along with it. Plus, we're also offering a free month's membership or a free month's subscription to the Daily Briefing. You want to check it out, see what it's like. Here, now's your chance to do so with no risk to you. All the details and information about the spring sale are at our website, eurodollar.university. Now, to maybe most people, the idea of a supply shock is just completely foreign because they believe in the mainstream Federal Reserve scenario, which is we had this tremendous inflationary recovery in 2021 and into 2022 that required pop-up Jay Powell to come in with his rate hikes to suppress demand just enough that we could normalize the system and reach a gentle and glide gently into the Goldilocks soft landing. So that has nothing to do with the supply shock. That's everything that came after. We had legitimate inflation, required rate hikes, skillfully introduced into the system, executed with the utmost care, and we have a soft landing scenario. Now, I think while most people, that's all they hear in the mainstream, they can sense, well, yeah, maybe, but what is all of this instability? There's too much that doesn't look and conform to the idea of a soft landing. And that brings us into the supply shock case, which, as I said, evidence for it is everywhere, including in consumer prices. So stage one of the supply shock, which are the huge imbalances between demand and supply. We all know that. Supply was restrained and restricted in a whole number of ways. And then demand, especially artificially boosted by Uncle Sam in particular, but also government measures around the rest of the world. Massive artificial interventions, which demand surged and recovered more than supply was able to service. Small e economics tells us the only way those two can reconcile is for prices to increase sharply, which they did. Now, prices went haywire because of that imbalance between supply and demand, not because of money printing. That's a key factor too. And the markets told us from the very beginning that it wasn't inflation and money printing. And I know most people say, who cares? Consumer prices went up, we don't care why, but this is the point, because actual inflation would end up in a very different set of circumstances than this artificial supply shock version of consumer price increases. That's the one where all the evidence is pointing us toward, not toward a restart of the 1970s, which is why you see, among other symptoms, not just the instability in the economy, but also disinflation setting in more and more. But we also have to keep in mind, too, that there are a tremendous number of financial imbalances that were introduced in 2021. We've talked about that before, commercial real estate, but there are also others, including residential real estate, stock prices potentially, a number of financial imbalances that also led to the same symptoms and the same outcomes. Not only do we have to revert to a mean with those, unstable along the way, plus the potential for disorder at the end. So the data I'm going to use here, because I think it illustrates the supply shock in all of its stages pretty well, is called total business sales, and maybe some inventories too. I'll throw the inventories in there as well. Now, total business sales tallies up, as the name implies, all the sales of goods throughout the supply chain. So we don't just have retail sales at the end. We also have wholesale sales, as well as manufacturers selling to wholesalers. So it basically looks at the entire goods economy, and rather than something like GDP, which only tallies up the value added introduced, or the value that's actually added at each intermediate stage, we're looking at this from the perspective of businesses operating on each of these levels of supply chain. Because even though I don't count if I'm a wholesaler and I resell a good to a retailer from a manufacturer, not all of that transaction gets counted in GDP, but for me, as a business, as a wholesaler, that's my entire revenue. So total business sales kind of looks at the economy more appropriately from the business perspective. And what we see in total business sales is exactly what you expect. There was an initial jump in January 2021, which was the second of Uncle Sam's helicopters. The first was in 2020, closer to the lockdowns. And then, of course, the bigger jump in business sales, March of 2021, beginning there, which was the third and largest of the transfers from Uncle Sam, which Americans promptly went out and spent it. Total business sales absolutely skyrocket through 2021, heading into 2022. Everything was off to the races. And it wasn't just the goods economy. As I mentioned, there's also the financial imbalances in commercial real estate in particular, multifamily, all that stuff. Now, here's the key point, though. That increase in sales was not financed by earned income. It was financed by the artificial introduction of transfers from the government. And that's a huge key, because earned income, as we know, is the basis for the economy, not just in terms of workers, but also from businesses. The government just transfers a whole pile from the banking system or wherever it gets it from, borrows it from banks, issuing bonds. It's a transfer to the real economy that gets spent. Well, in Keynesian economics, that's supposed to unleash a virtuous circle of rising aggregate demand, leading to more hiring and more spending, leading to more spending and more hiring, and on it goes. But in reality, it was such an artificial intrusion. Not only did it increase sales, it increased prices well above what could be supported by actual earned income. That's the mean that we end up having to revert to. And the statistics that we'll get to at the end suggest it might not be such an easy reversion. So in the early part of 2022, as prices got more and more out of control, of course, then we had the oil price spike, which was coincident to the Russian invasion of Ukraine. There's actually two price spikes, March and April, and then again, May of 2022. But essentially, it was too much for the economy to bear. So we started to transition from phase one, or stage one of the supply shock, into stage two, which was far more unstable. Because contrary to popular perceptions, and I did a video about this recently, oil prices are not inflation. When oil prices go up, as simply because we are price inelastic to oil, what that means is we're going to continue to pay whatever price we have to for energy, but at the expense of spending and activity in other parts of the economy. So it's another transfer, and an unproductive transfer, to the energy sector at the expense of the more productive and more sustainable sectors of the economy. So we become even more unstable. In the U.S., this transition was marked by the technical recession in the first half of 2022. Remember that? That was the slowdown which told us the economy had transitioned from the artificial, yay, this is great prosperity, to, wait a minute, some of these things aren't working out so well. We're paying way too much for energy, and it's leaving not enough spending power for everything else. So we see that in terms of total business sales, those began to slow in April of 2022. And remember, these are nominal terms too. We'll get to the real business sales in just a second. But nominal total business sales, they slowed down in April 2022 and peaked in June of 2022, just like the CPI statistics. It wasn't the rate hikes. It was the transition from the initial stage of the supply shock to the second stage. So that last big oil price spike was one price spike too far. The cure for high prices started to be those high prices themselves. So we see the transition into stage two and a whole bunch of economic data, including GDI. I'll get an update on GDI later this week. As far as real total business sales, those peaked in March and April of 2022. And in real terms, adjusted by the CPI, it's been downhill ever since, which again, it's obviously an unstable economy where you have volumes of purchases declining consistently or relatively consistently. Nothing ever goes in a straight line. And it also gets marked by more and more businesses have to deal with this downside that is emerging. They look at their revenues that are no longer growing, as total business sales shows, and they say, well, I don't need to bring on any more workers. Maybe I need to start trimming my costs because revenues aren't growing and costs are still high. That never changes. Purchasing power gets destroyed in the first stage of the supply shock imbalance, what everybody calls inflation. But businesses are adjusting. And again, we have tons of evidence for that. There's a hiring freeze. There's cuts in hours and full-time jobs. So we can see lots of corroboration for the second stage of the supply shock. And that's why it feels so unstable and unsteady, because it really is. Even though the Fed is assuring us that we're on target for a soft landing, we can feel that we're falling behind. Purchasing power of incomes, they never really caught up. In fact, they're falling further and further behind, as we see in statistics like real disposable personal income, which, again, suggests and shows that the economy is out of whack. Maybe that's the best analogy here. We know about commercial real estate, multifamily apartments, all the assumptions that went into financial prices surging in 2021 and the early part of 2022. But now that businesses are having to come, investors are having to come to grips with all of those mistaken assumptions, we know the financial part of the supply shock bubble has to be repriced to something more realistic. The same thing is going on in the real economy. We have to not reprice the economy, but we have to reset it to a more sustainable, more stable fundamental basis. And that stable fundamental basis is income. Now, I mentioned disposable personal income, but let me throw another statistic out there that really does demonstrate the difference between what we're supposed to be doing, the prosperity or the supply shock being a recovery, and where we actually are in terms of income and income potential. As of February 2024, the latest payroll reports that we got from the household survey, it showed that there were only 132.9 million jobs. Of course, that number has shrunk over the last several months leading up to February because of the steps taken by businesses to better align their own companies and cost structure with what's going on in the transition stage here. Compare the amount of full-time jobs in February 2024 with December 2019, before we got into the supply shock, the pandemic, the lockdowns, and everything. In December 2019, there were 131.7 million full-time jobs, which means in the 4+ years since then, there are only 1.2 million more full-time jobs. Only 1.2 million full-time jobs for 4 years change. And really, to really punctuate what I'm trying to say here, when you put the trend on it, and the trend I'm using here only goes back to 2009. So it's the post-2008 trend, which is not exactly the most robust trend in full-time jobs or in the labor market overall. But assuming that there was never a pandemic, nor lockdowns, nor recession, nor any of this supply shock stuff, if everything had kept going from 2019 and 2020 uninterrupted, on trend, on that prior trend, there would have been 141.2 million full-time jobs as of February 2024. So while there are more full-time jobs in February 2024 than December 2019, that's not the right comparison. What really shows you the downside potential and the reversion and the instability where that's coming from, we are 9 million full-time jobs short of where we would have been had there been no interruption in 2020. And of course, we're assuming that some of the other factors like demographics and things would only have modestly slowed down that trend. But again, we're using a conservative post-2008 trend line here. 9 million full-time jobs, a gap which has only grown over the last 6 months as these businesses transition through the second stage of the supply shock. And so what is the income potential of the U.S. economy at only 132.9 million jobs rather than 141.2? Because businesses, when they were setting out their plans back in 2021, were envisioning a future where there was 141.2 million full-time jobs, not 132.9. So the income potential of the economy is substantially, and I mean substantially less than what everybody was picturing, not just in 2021 and 2022, but over the last couple years. And as all of the artificiality of the 2021 and 2022 supply shock really do wear off, we're left facing this deficiency in the labor market. Fundamentally, it's both a recognition of how businesses are looking at what the economy actually is, as well as the income potential of spending through consumers. 132.9 is supposed to be 141.2. Now, only some of that lost purchasing power in full-time jobs that never recovered, never happened, was made up for in rising wages. So pay rates went up, but that only partly offset that deficiency in the labor market. The rest of it was made up temporarily by Uncle Sam's transfers. And as we go through time and the real labor market continues to lag further and further behind, the deficit gets larger and larger and larger and requires eventually a reversion to the mean. A new equilibrium that's at the 132.9 full-time jobs level, not 141.9 or 141.2. So this is where we look at stage three, the reversion to the equilibrium, and say, yeah, how do we go from an economy that was expecting 141.2 million full-time jobs but only got 132.9? It's going to require some substantial adjustments, including maybe more job losses, because these things tend to overshoot on the downside. Not only do we have that potential in financial markets with commercial real estate overshooting in prices and revaluations and everything else, we have the same possible potential in the real economy too. More layoffs on top of this huge deficit to begin with. More coming to grips with lost purchasing power from the paying way too much for energy, from not getting enough actual earned income back in the economy, having it supplemented too much by Uncle Sam. So there is that stage three that is still ahead of us. What the evidence shows, and go back to total business sales here, we're still in the second stage. And we really maybe have started the third stage. You see the downturn in business sales. We already talked about retail sales, the household survey, not just full-time jobs, but maybe there are some layoffs beginning to happen. It may be that stage three is starting to unfold, but the evidence for that isn't as clear. The evidence for stage two and the evidence for the supply shock process overall, that is all around us. And we start to see some of that stage three stuff in the recessions around the rest of the world, Germany, Europe, Japan, and other places that are really slowing down and on the cusp of recession already. Finland's another one. Essentially, we see the supply shock and we see that third stage beginning to emerge, but it just isn't that clear yet. But it has to emerge. We have to get to a point where we transition from the unstable economy that we see in all of these accounts and statistics to whatever the actual underlying fundamental baseline really is. And if it is, as it usually is, labor market and income, as in the United States or Europe, that's where it can get really messy and tricky and potentially disorderly. If you want to revisit the last payroll report and where these household survey numbers are coming from, and it's worth checking it out, that's the video I've got linked below. As always, I thank you very much for joining me. Check out Eurodollar University Spring Sale at our website. If you are a member or subscriber already, I cannot thank you enough. And until next time, take care.